stopped exactly at this point. I was trying to argue that if there is a violation of the WKV approximation beyond the Planck scale, then this will modify the inflationary power spectrum. And one feature which I think is quite generic is that this will produce superimposed oscillations in the inflationary power spectrum. So I will use my extra time to make some additional remarks on the data analysis that we have performed with the WMAP3 data. And I will tell you things which I think are important to tell. There are some bad news and some good news. But before doing this, I would just would like to show you another calculation of the inflationary power spectrum, not using a modified expansion relation as we originally did with Robert, but using the so-called minimal approach. So in this approach, we don't modify the form of the equation of motions, contrary to what we do when we use a modified expansion relation, but we just change the initial conditions. So maybe this is not very useful because we have been discussed this many times, but anyway, I want to give you some equation for the modified inflationary power spectrum. So this is again the plot of the Hubble lens versus time. So this is inflation, and then we have radiation and matter dominated eras. So we know that usually we just assume the Bunch Davis vacuum, and we do it at minus infinity in conformal time. So what we are going to do in this approach is, as again, I repeat, as we have discussed many times, that we just assume that there is a new fundamental scale, characteristic scale in the problem, MC or LC, and we just assume that all the modes that are relevant for the CMB and that we see today in the CMB just appear when their wavelength was equal to this new characteristic scale that I've introduced in the problem. So in this sense, we have a scale-dependent, we have scale-dependent initial conditions, contrary to the usual case where we just have scale-independent initial conditions because we take the Bunch Davis vacuum at minus infinity. So now it's quite easy to guess what will be the order of magnitude of the correction. We have two scales in the problem, the Hubble scale during inflation and the new characteristic scale. And necessarily, the amplitude of the correction will be controlled by the ratio of those two scales to some power. And of course, the question is, what is this power? So I just give you one equation for the inflationary power spectrum. So this is assuming that we fix the initial condition, that is to set the value of the mode function and its derivative at this scale-dependent initial time. And then, of course, you have to specify in which scale, in which quantum state the scale appear. So this is described by this C of K and D of K complex numbers. And if you want to do it on pure phenomenological grounds, you obviously don't know what are these numbers. So the only thing that you know is that if you send the new characteristic scale to infinity, you should recover the usual result, that is to say the Bunch Davis vacuum. So the most general thing that you can do is just to expand these two numbers in terms of the only small parameter that you have in the problem, namely the ratio of the two scales that I call here sigma zero. So you see that if sigma zero goes to zero, this That is to say, if the new scale n goes to infinity, this reproduces exactly the Bunch Davis vacuum state. And once you have these equations, it's just the technical stuff to calculate the power spectrum. So this is the power spectrum for density perturbations, for instance. And here is a plot of this power spectrum. So amplitude of the power spectrum versus k. And you see, so you see this cosine on this side. So these are the superimposed oscillations. And you see these oscillations here on the plot for values of this sigma parameter. So there is one remark that I wanted to do, is that you see that we have these two spheroidal parameters, epsilon 1 and epsilon 2. And usually, sometimes in the literature, you see the power spectrum expressed in only one, in terms of only one spheroidal parameters. And this means that in this case, the people have not computed the power spectrum of scalar modes, but the power spectrum of tensor modes. Because if you do the calculation exactly for scalar modes, if you take into account the correct shape of the effective potential for scalar modes, then it's necessarily the two spheroidal parameters will appear. The other remark that I would like to do is that you see that the amplitude of the superimposed oscillation is given by the small parameter times this x parameter, and that the frequency is given by typically the inverse of this parameter. So if x is not equal to 1, the amplitude of the correction is not given by the inverse of the frequency, as sometimes it is assumed. So this, another way to put it, is that here the amplitude of the superimposed oscillation is an independent parameter and not exactly the inverse of the frequency. We have two independent parameters, the frequency and the amplitude of the correction. And of course, we have also the phase.
But how can that be, since they only appear multiplied when they're introduced?
No, because here, in this omega, you have also sigma zero, which appears alone. Omega is the effective frequency, so this is k squared minus the potential. And here, you only have sigma zero.
So, a question, just to be sure, y does not appear.
No, not at first order. Not at first order.
Eliminated by c squared
minus d squared equal 1, is the question.
So if you work out the c squared minus d squared at first order, it tells you that wire plus wire star must be zero. But here, wire does not appear because it turns out that at first order it doesn't show that. If you push the expansion at second order, then wire appears.
C and D are real?
No, C and D are complex numbers.
Whatever the complex value of y, it is appeared.
At first order.
At first order.
Yep. Okay, so then you get this complicated power spectrum, and this is exactly this power spectrum that we have used in order to compare with the data. So now I jump again to some transparency that I have.
Is there any other approximations that go into deriving the power spectrum, like any sort of mode matching, or have you derived the power spectrum directly from these initial conditions?
Yeah, directly. Yeah.
Either.
Okay, and so expansion in sigma zero and in the small parameters.
Okay, sure. Like this, nothing else.
Another question about back reaction.
Oh, yeah. I come to that. So I just jumped. Okay.
In principle, such oscillations could generally, I suppose, be mimicked by some fine infratop potential.
Yes.
Do you know how that would have to look like? Would simple oscillation, would they have to be somehow related oscillations?
You mean an infratop potential like that?
Yeah.
No. Didn't we talk about this during Conrad's talk? I mean, what potential would have to look like to mimic this oscillation? I think things would have to look very, I mean, there's no intuitive way to construct a potential.
But you say the Dutch appraiser would definitely, if oscillations were found, would definitely favor, yes, on this, right?
No, I don't think so, because there are other models where you can generate oscillation in the power spectrum. This is actually one of the remarks that I wanted to make.
Yes?
Yeah. So even if you find superimposed oscillation in the power spectrum, there is of course no guarantee that these superimposed oscillations are of, let's say, transplanckian origin. The only thing which could be used is the fact that if they are of transplanckian origin, I think that the correction should go like cosine of logarithm scale. While in the other models, you don't have this logarithm. So you could try to study the detailed shape of the oscillations. And actually, this is another remark that I wanted to make. So,
But certainly, I would believe that there are degeneracies with oscillations in the scalar spectrum. But presumably, you could have, in the ideal world, you would have, say, scalar and tensor spectrum. Presumably, in your case, the oscillations occur in a way that I cannot reproduce with an infraton potential.
Well, that's right. That has to be calculated, namely that the consistency condition between the scalar and tensor amplitudes and the spectral index, that would be violated.
We can be violated.
Oh, yeah.
If you choose different vacuum
for
both, which is not necessarily natural. Right? So, but it gives you more freedom to violate the consistency relation.
Generically, it is violated. But the correction, I mean, remember that already observing this ratio is something very challenging. And observing the consistency check of inflation is even more challenging because you don't have. I mean, it's not only the question of detecting the B modes, it's also the question of detecting the slope of the gravitational wave spectrum, which is even more challenging than just see the B modes. And then what you would need is to get the correction. So, okay. So I think this I showed before. So I just wanted to make a comment on this equation. So this equation is just an expression for the multiple moments, for the CMD multiple moments. And just wanted to say how I can obtain this expression. So it's of course not an exact expression, but it's just the equivalent, if you remember the expression of the multiple moment, usually it's given by integral over k times the initial power spectrum, times some function which tells you how you translate three-dimensional scale to two-dimensional scale on the sphere. This is a Bessel function. K squared, k theta. No, sorry, k. Or let's say k theta last. And usually, when you just insert the standard result, so some power of k, you can integrate this equation exactly, and this tells you that the multiple moments are proportional to 1 over ln plus 1. So this equation is in fact valid only if L is very small, typically L smaller than 20, and this is exactly this equation which tells you that you have the Sachs-Wolff plateau. And because this is LL plus 1 times C. C of n. Now it turns out that you can redo this calculation not only with the standard inflationary prediction, but with the Fourier spectrum that I showed before. And this is how I obtain this equation. So this equation for the multiple moment is only valid for very small values of n. And I think I forgot to mention it the last time. Of course, if you want to compute the full multiple moments, you have to do it numerically.
So the data is that you know?
Actually, I think that this is not this is the value map one because there is this unbiased.
So you can ask a question.
Yeah.
The power of sigma zero is now 1 plus pi r.
Yeah. So exactly, this is
because of the filtering.
Yeah. Exactly. And you see. So this equation is derived. So you can do this calculation exactly for small value of n and give a very complicated expression in terms of complex Gamma function. But if you want to have an equation which says something to you, then you can use this approximation. If you just assume that epsilon 1 divided by sigma is larger than n, then it reduces to this expression. And it tells you two things. First, you start with logarithmic oscillation in the k space, and you just have ordinary oscillation in the n space, and you can see here. And you see, another thing that you can see is that at very small values of n, the oscillation will be damped because of this factor. And of course, as n is growing, this factor will become important, but of course this formula will break down. But if you do the calculation exactly, that is to say numerically, you exactly see this behavior. So this expression is interesting because this is a way to understand what you see numerically. So you see, so this is a plot of the difference between the standard C of L and the C of L with the oscillation. And you see that the amplitude of the oscillation, so for different values of sigma zero. The black, the red, and the blue one are for three different values of sigma zero. And you see that the oscillations are, so to say, damped at very large scales, and that they appear only at the level of the third over peak or at the rise of the third.
Is that because?
It's because of the convolution.
The convolution.
The convolution, because the C of L is the convolution between the initial power spectrum and the transfer function, which is in this case the Bessel function. The transfer function which...
But what I mean is it ultimately due just to the fact that if you start with something that's not the vacuum and run it for a while, it will redshift away everything that's not the vacuum. Mm-hmm. The longer you run for it before the mode becomes...
Mm-hmm.
No, that's not what's going on.
No.
Well, then, fundamentally, why are short scales more modified?
I have no better explanation than this equation.
It's like a filter.
It's just the convolution.
Yes. You go from K to L. In the passage from K to L, you average out over various keys.
You lose.
So, and in the L dependent way, the washing out is L dependent.
I'm curious, did you say what the small frame is, the graph of the small frame?
Okay, so this is the difference between the multiple one and the standard one without the oscillation. And the one with the oscillations for three different values of sigma zero.
So as you make the sigma zero smaller, the point is that the frequency increases, but the amplitude goes down.
So the blue one is for a small value of sigma zero, and the black one, for instance, for a large value of sigma zero. Simply because the amplitude is proportional to. I mean, the amplitude in the power spectrum.
It's hard to read the numbers that you have.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Even here, I think it's 10 to the minus 2.6 and 10 to the minus 3.3.
Well, it would seem that they're
so different.
Yeah, but it would, in the large plot, what sigma did you choose next?
I'm sorry?
In the large plot, you have those oscillations.
Oh, this is so. In this case, this is the best fit obtained with the WMAP 1 data. So the
best fit meaning the large.
You take the WMAP 1 data and you fit the three parameter of the Bohr spectrum, as I explained the last time. The amplitude, the frequency.
What's the difference in classical?
So this is what I explained last time. And I go to this point now.
But the, sorry, just to be clear, the 5R is the universal or the...
What do you mean by universal?
That is, if I go to higher k's or if I leave that domain, should I expect the reduction factor due to the convolution to be more efficient, that is the power of sigma zero in the denominator of the numerator? That is, could I generically expect that there is this reduction by power?
So the correct?
If you ask me why it's 5 over 2.
No, can it be larger or smaller?
Less
or more? Or should I expect that it's always be more given the approximation you use if I don't make those approximations? Or can I have a better window somehow in the n space than that one?
The leading correction is now order 7 halves. So
can you compete?
Can get 5 halves, 3 halves, 1 half, can you get 1 in the small parameter?
I mean, if I push the expansion in sigma zero,
for instance, yeah.
No.
Not push the expansion in sigma zero at a different
L.
But at different L, there is nothing that I can do analytically.
No,
even
but
even in the standard case, I cannot do it. Usually, in the standard case, I just obtain one over L plus one, and this is the only analytical equation I can obtain. I should even mention that this is assuming that there is no cosmological constant. Because if you have a cosmological constant, then you have the integrated Zeeckbohr effect here. And this equation is no longer valid. Even in the standard case, this is really the best I can do.
But you could try to do it numerically and see which way it goes.
Yeah, so numerically, I told you, the oscillations are damped for small n. And then you see that the damping is less efficient when you reach the rise of the first block. This is exactly what you see here.
And this is the best you can expect to get.
But to explain...
From the numerical plot, you could extract the scaling. You know.
We have checked that indeed it scales like that. But for either hand, for smaller scales...
But it can be less suppressed.
Yes, you can see it here. Okay, so to answer your question, the drop in the chi-square is minus 12 for the best fit. So this is the best fit for the WMAP 3 data. And now there is a couple of remarks that I wanted to do. So the first one, is linked to this plot. So this is a plot of, so to say, the evolution. So this is the chi-square of the WMAP. Sorry, this is the chi-square of the fit with the oscillation minus the chi-square of the standard inflationary scenario versus L. So this plot tells you at which scale you gain in chi-square. So you see that for small values, so this is for WMAP 1, this is for WMAP 3, so you see at large scales, the difference between the chi-square with or without the oscillation is basically zero. So it means that at large scales, I mean, including the oscillation in the power spectrum does not provide a better fit. And it's very easy to understand. It's simply because at large scale you have the cosmic variance. And therefore, even if you modify slightly the power spectrum or the multiple moments, you won't improve the chi-square. And it's exactly the reason why, I mean, there have been all this discussion about the low quadrupole. But if you look at the statistical significance of the low quadrupole in the chi-square, you just see that it's not important, simply because the error bar is big. So if you want to improve the chi-square, you should not try to do something at the level of the quadrupole, but you should try to do something at higher scales, or smaller scales. And so you see the evolution of the... So you get a lot at the level of the Doppler, of the third Doppler plane and the second Doppler or acoustic plane. So you see that what you gain in the chi-square does not come only from a small part of the C of L, but it goes all the way down from, let's say, the rise of the first peak to, let's say, the rise of the third peak, where then you don't have any signal because the error bar becomes big at those scales.
So the
curves. So the black one is the gain in the chi-square coming from the temperature measurement. The red one, it's coming from the TE polarization. The blue one is the sum of the two. And the green one, I don't remember. So it's just to say that the gain in the chi-square does not come only from one or two points. It really goes all the way down in scales. And this is exactly the reason why, despite the fact that this famous cosmic variance outliers has disappeared, you still get a good fit, even with the W maps predator.
Can you remind us the three extra parameters you have added?
Amplitude, phase, and frequency of the oscillations.
The frequency being independent of the amplitude.
No.
Independent.
And actually, it's good that you asked the question because this is my following remark. So now, as I said the last time, the question is it statistically significant or not, this drop in the chi-square? And the first remark that I wanted to make is that in order to get this good chi-square, so minus 20, it's absolutely compulsory to have independent amplitude and frequency. If you take the power spectrum where the amplitude of the oscillation is just the inverse of the frequency, then you don't get this good chi-square. So it's absolutely compulsory to consider amplitude and frequency of the oscillation are independent parameters. And this is why, if you look at other papers on the market, this is why this is why they miss this best fit. It's simply because they assume that the amplitude of the oscillation scales at the inverse of the frequency. And if you do this, it's clear that you are going to miss this best fit.
Can you re-explain the statistical significance of the black line and the pink one when
yes.
they diverge radically, because I couldn't get it at the time.
Okay, so this is the, let's say this is the mean likelihood and marginalized probabilities for the amplitude. So the mean likelihood, is something which is sensitive only to the absolute value of the likelihood in the parameter space, irrespective of the volume occupied by the best fit in the parameter space. While the marginalized probabilities is something which is sensitive to the amplitude of the light yield, but also by the volume occupied by the best fit. So, as I said the last time, in order to get this good fit, you need to lock the oscillations quite precisely. So if you just shift a little bit the oscillations, then of course the chi-square will be less good. And this shows that the volume, the parameter space, the volume occupied by this best fit is smaller. Because if you just change a little bit, then the chi-square. Just
this specific configuration, so is more represented by the pink or the black line? The phenomenon you just described.
So the black line is the marginalized probability. So this is the quantity which is sensitive to the volume occupied by the best fit. And since the volume occupied by the best fit is small, this is exactly why this curve is peaked at a zero amplitude. It tells you that the volume occupied by the best fit is so small that a vanishing amplitude is still the most.
But physically, why would we expect the volume of an exact solution, like one oscillation that should be present, occupy a large region in phase space?
Robustness.
Robustness, yes, but yeah, well, if there really is.
No. Actually, we should worry, right? I mean, if you have a best fit with oscillations, but you get just a good fit if you just move the oscillations, I mean, that would not be a good sign.
Yeah. You know, it's a long debate between people, frequentists and Bayesian.
I think it depends on the kind of physics that you want to constrain with this. In this case, there's supposed to be only one oscillation, and not a statistical ensemble of oscillations.
But maybe I can say something more on this.
Which would improve our fit.
Maybe I can say something more on this, and this has to do with this plot. So here, this is the. So here this was the amplitude, here this is the frequency. And there is a nice paper by the WMAP people where they show that if there are actually oscillations in the data, and if you try to fit these oscillations with a power spectrum which has oscillations, then you should expect frequency beating in the light field. Because if you have oscillation in the power spectrum, okay, you get the best fit when you lock the oscillations to the oscillations that are present in the data. But if you just try, if you take twice the frequency, then you should still improve a little bit the best fit. And so you expect some frequency beating or some spikes into the light field. And this is exactly what you see here.
Wow.
And this we did not have for the WMAP 1 data. So.
But there may be another reason for the beating. Because, the L coordinate is not continuous, the L coordinate is discrete. And, there are integers, the L. Right? So,
yeah.
What is the wavelength of those small oscillations in terms of how many integers in L space do they typically occupy? How does that compare? Because you might just be hitting one of these discretization.
No, it's much larger than this. It's 30 or 40 something. Actually, this is another point. I should not call this the best fit. Because for the following reason, when you try to implement this oscillation in CNB fast, then you quickly realize that it's very difficult to do it because the computation of one model is very time consuming. So usually when you run CNB fast for the standard inflationary power spectrum, you compute one model in 1 second. With those oscillations, it can take more than 1 minute. Because you have to change the sampling the screening was okay. It's a technical details, but instead of 1 second, you need more than 1 minute.
And are you sure it's robust?
And you have okay, and it's robust precisely for those technical details. So if you try to compute this with the standard options of CNBFast, it's not going to work. You have to change the accuracy of it's a very numerically this is a very tricky business. But what I wanted to say is that since instead of 1 second you need one minute or even more to compute one model, when you try to investigate the whole parameter space, it becomes extremely heavy. And in fact, we could not do it. So what we have done is that we have fixed the values of the cosmological parameter, but the base cosmological parameter, so cosmological constant, baryons, so to their best fit value, to their WMAP3 data best fit value, we obtain without the oscillations. And we have run the code only on those parameters that characterize the primordial spectrum. But what should be done, of course, is the full investigation. And maybe if you do this, maybe you can find even a better fit. So this one is not the, it should be called a better fit, not the best fit in the street sense.
When you said you couldn't do it, is that, what kind of computer are you using, or computers?
Ah,
okay. One workstation?
No, it's, well, if you ask me the name of the computer.
No, but I just mean it is the...
No, it's already a powerful computer. Namely, you have to apply. You cannot use it like that.
Okay.
How many processes?
I don't know.
2, 4, 1,000?
I don't. Okay.
I suppose the question is, I mean, is it realistic that it couldn't be done? Or does it somehow exponentially?
I mean, with the kind of computer that we have used, it's not realistic. It would take years.
Actually, I've heard about, not in this context, but other modern astrophysical Monte Carlo type things. People have developed techniques to sample parameter space.
Oh, this is what we use.
You're already using it.
Yeah.
Okay.
So it's not yet the end of the talk. Maybe I stop. Why stop?